I don't listen to myself.
It's always very painful.
I was wondering if Dad's going to listen to
it. You know, we get hits on it. People like council meetings, really? We get several hundred hits, and you think, okay, well, people are here.
Council meetings, I see.
But engaged.
You're right. That's all you could ask for, right?
Yes. So 7:35, let's call the meeting to order. First item of business is a roll call, I guess.
Okay.
Yes.
What? Oh wow! Well,
now you're excused,
my new hero.
And donuts. Oh, okay. We are recording?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. So our chair is here. Dave Moritz, Bill is here. Paige, Matt, myself. The mayor is. I'm going to say excused. He's in a work conference in Palm Springs or Palm Desert. Or something on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. He'll be returning, but obviously he said if there's anything that comes up, we can get his attention and call him. Akram should be here momentarily.
Okay. So seeing no members of the public present, I guess we'll move on to the next item, which is discussion items. The meeting minutes are attached to the agenda.
Let me just explain to you, what we provide is summary action minutes. These are not transcripts. They're not intended to be transcripts. They're intended to get sort of themes, if you will, and actions that you may take. So you'll see they're just sort of generic comments about what we talked about. They're not intended to get specific dialogue, and that's why we tape the meeting for that purpose. So clarification, different than sort of what you may have seen, but it's in an effort to move the process along.
Before we jump into approving you all distribute the loot.
What's really
Yes, exactly.
Thank you guys.
Wow.
We should be able to get out, you think?
Leave my loot, whatever.
Well, it looks like it's generally covered what we discussed, so I'll move we approve the minutes from last week.
Do I have a second?
1 second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Full too full, so he needs to pour a cup of coffee.
He smells?
Why don't we just pour some out? Maybe that'll help.
There you go.
Yeah, they should give a lot of stuff there.
And wait and get the big punch.
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you.
Three bits for you.
You're all right, you know that?
Yes.
Yeah. Despite what they say about
me. I love having friends.
Thank you.
Well, fellow lead surveyors, you know, we stick together.
We do. We don't, who will.
You're okay, Paige?
I'm good, as you can see.
Steve doesn't take
it. Oh, it's Steve.
He doesn't
take
it. Oh, okay.
I didn't do it. Luckily.
All right, I'll go in.
What's it gonna be?
This guy here. Matt, there you go.
Akram doesn't get any donuts since he got here late.
Crazy on 5. Thank you.
No worries.
We just started and there's coffee and donuts.
She's got your coffee.
My God, thank you. That's a service.
Wait, she got late all the time.
Hooray for the chairman. Chairwoman.
Every time we go to a restaurant, I pay and they give her the change.
We were just in the discussion items. Akram, we just approved the minutes. So to move on, we need to establish an election of a vice chair. So do I have any nominations for vice chair?
We had one, I think.
Paige. I'll happily do it. Yes.
All right. All in favor of Paige being vice chair?
Aye.
Thank you, team.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is the Brown Act Form 700 filings.
I think we have received most everybody's.
You need mine, and it was
yours.
In my car to bring you this morning, okay. And then I switched cars.
I left it at the office yesterday, okay. So I'll bring it properly either today. Or
you have basically 30 days from day of taking office, so we really okay. Yours. We probably need to get filed. Yours.
I'll drop mine today or tomorrow.
Okay, and email it to us with, you know. Following up with that, so the hard copy is fine, but just get something on record is okay. The important thing.
Okay. Next item of business is the overview of our street storm drain and sewer master plans.
This was a follow-up that we talked about. If that, you know, he gave out the material, and you guys were going to sort of look at it, any questions or things that you wanted to talk about. So I've agendized it just simply if you want to talk about it, he's available. We could talk more about it, obviously, any one of them you want to talk about.
I think we were looking to see a copy of the CIP list of streets that were. Was that in the last packet?
I think you gave one, didn't you? Last one. If not, I'll make sure we email
sure
it.
There,
I think it's this.
It's this. There is one. But I think you were looking for the total, all the streets, for the PCI listing, right?
That was correct.
Right, so Akram, you
from the. In other words, a listing of the streets with the its PSI.
Right.
And also the 7-year, that's for
that's
the
for
coming,
the current project. But
yeah.
You wanted a full inventory of all of our streets.
Okay. I wanted to see what was on target.
Like whatever payment management plan
yes.
that you had.
Yes, yeah. The 7 years. Okay. Matter of fact, I think I mentioned it last time. We will be updating the pavement management this year, to meet the Measure M requirements, because every 2 years has to be updated, and we will be also updating the whole pavement management and the 7-year budgeting and so on and all that. So that whatever we'll provide you from 2 years, it might change also depending on the inventory and the results, which is will be. Done by the end of June.
One of the things we talked about too as a follow-up to our last item was the sewer work that was being done, and you had suggested that we contact the health department or ask that we look at the plans and the concerns. So Akram, myself, and both of us have talked to the health department. They have the plans, and you know, they'll be doing it. I think there's some discussion about what they consider new construction versus maintenance.
Right.
So a lot of it's an interpretation issue. Akram, is that correct?
Correct.
But again, we've already forwarded over to them, so the health department, better safe than sorry, and have them tell us yay or nay or any modifications. So we'll be sharing those with you as a follow-up.
Okay. Is the project bidding or is it actually in construction?
No, it has not bid out.
It has not bid out. Okay.
Pending
okay.
anything that the health department
right.
says,
yes.
right.
we may have to amend the bid
okay.
to reflect that. So like you suggested. I think last time.
So I did send out, I did locate the state health department regulations and the recent.
Yeah, the guidance.
And I sent the guidance and I sent that around to the committee members. So
right.
everyone got that.
Yes. So by the way, the health department I talked to, I came from the county, so I know the health department. The individual, the health director, I am good friends with him. He actually lives right on the other side of San Diego here. He used to run environmental health, and in his, I talked to environmental health. Their comment was not many cities check with us on some of these maintenance and repair things, so they were appreciative, but they wanted to make it clear that some of the regulations are for new constructions and some are for old, and you know, they want to see the plans. And but you know, he said, you know, if the maintenance is not the issue, because maintenance typically all of California would be out of compliance pretty much in their perspective, because there's so much infrastructure that's existing, yeah, that people.
Well, there's some instances where it's there are some instances where old and narrow streets and
yeah,
they're certainly out there, but there is a prohibited zone also,
yeah,
that we have to, if we can, stay out of. And if we can't, then they have special regulations, I believe, about,
right,
what you can do with a pipe and joints, and there's special, and that adds to the cost of a project usually. Mm-hmm. So, and there's also this constructability issue. It's not just health department, but constructability too, because mm-hmm, when you're so close to a main water line, and Serrano's facilities are not exactly shiny, spanking new, so when you try to have them dig within a foot or two of a sewer main, a water main, there's always a chance that it will blow out, or you have to shut it down for a week and leave the people without water while the construction's going on. So,
and that's a thing, too. We should say we've talked to the water district after our meeting. Right. That was the other discussion we had. So I apologize. It wasn't just the health department. It was actually the water district, Serrano, and they actually went on site with the
and looked at it. Good.
So
maybe they'll upgrade some of their facilities while we're at it. Open it wide enough.
The jurisdiction of this group probably doesn't help on them.
Yeah, matter of fact, I did talk to the water district, and we went out on the field, and we even went and opened the manholes to verify to see what's also one more time the depth of the sewer line, and also the separation, the vertical separation from the sewer line and the water line, and also the same thing with the horizontal. The vertical you're talking about, there's a 7 feet difference from the water line to the sewer. The sewer line is about 11 feet deep. Water line is about 36 to close to 40 inches. So separation-wise, vertically there is big, but Leia is correct in when you come into construction trenching, trying to replace that pipe, you need to be the contractor needs to be very careful on shoring, that trench to prevent any blowout because it's
caving
that close.
Also,
yeah,
right.
Caving and so on.
And
yeah,
that gets expensive, too.
Yes, right. And so one of the things even we looked at, since we have videos of all the lines, of the sewer lines, I had, Charlie McKinley, who's a utility engineer from the NV5, and he was with Baker and so on, to look at it and says, okay, let's see what is, what can we do on the line itself. One of the possibility, and we looked at it, is because there is one spot which is need to be repaired. There's a couple of small sags, and originally, because of the sags, we said, need to replace the whole pipe. And one of the possibilities says, really the sags is, because when we opened it, it's flowing, because it's, it's steep.
Kind of steep.
And it's kind of steep, and it's that it's continuously flowing, and it's flowing at a good rate. So one possibility is, okay, instead of replacing the whole thing, what we can do is just spot repair, the area that needs to be repaired, and then realign it. Yes, realigning is not going to take care of the sag. That is something which is, it cannot be resolved with the realigning. But since the rest of the pipe is still in good condition and so on, and it's flowing with that, with the steepness, it really would not be, any problem on the operation of the line itself. So that's one way of looking at it, without replacing the whole thing, or without, relocating it. So that's, we're keeping that option open, and to see what is the best solution to come up with that section.
So how much money do you save by doing that?
There will be some saving, definitely.
That was a lot of saving.
There will be saving because you're talking about a close to, I think, 350 feet long. So replacing it and the construction of it, it's so there. Yes, there will be saving. I haven't calculated the difference in cost, but there will be some. But again,
for the long term value to the city, then that should be weighed against. You know, we don't have the extra cost of manhole. There are just a few feet of pipe, maybe to move it to the other side. Maybe one more manhole, depending on which area you're looking. So we need to look at the value to the city of letting this stand with a sewer lining, which, I don't know, has a life of...
At least it'll give you 15 to 20 years.
Versus...
Do you guys normally do, like, alternative bids and, you know, maybe ask the contractor to do it both ways, give you a price, and you guys decide which one makes more sense, you know?
Because the plants do both. I mean, you have lining and we spot repair replacement in the plans,
bid. Yes.
In your bid.
That is correct.
So Matt has an excellent point. If we don't know how much it's going to cost, per se, at least we know replacement is all.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's economies of scale, right? If you have too many places that... Maybe you'll get a good deal, and maybe city decides that's a better for the long run, right?
I mean, we can put an option for that section for construction, or you know, the other option is bid alternative is to have it spot repair and so on. As Leia mentioned, in the bid documents we have both, so we have. Spot repairs, we have relining, and we have also replacement. So we can see also the unit prices.
One thing I'm going to warn you, we have this all the time in our projects, is the key is really for the owner to decide how you're going to determine the best or the lowest, if you're going with the low bid, and, you know, is it the base bid, you know?
Yes.
Or, you know, you can't really decide based on all the options and stuff. So you're going to have to, like, clearly say
that is correct.
You know, per base bid, but we have a right to review the alternative bid numbers and make a selection.
And that is exactly correct. I mean, that's exactly what we do also here. Mm-hmm. We have the base bid, and the you choose the contractor based on that base bid, and then you have the other alternatives. And even if you know, then you can change depending on what the city decides on that. But the awarding is based on the base bid.
Okay, then you just have to decide which one of those alternatives should go on.
Yeah, for the public works bid, we'd have to go with low bid, I think that's right.
Yeah,
that's correct.
For the base bid, we don't have a choice there.
Yes.
But I would be interested in at least doing the long-term solution as the base bid with the alternate if it comes in high. Because even with the spot repair and the slip lining, being so close to the waterline in Santiago, it still means that those guys are going to have to come up with shoring for 11-foot deep cut,
a small section.
A section, but where if they just move it all, they can abandon the one. And so there may be a very close trade-off between giving us a 50-plus-year solution versus a 15-year solution.
Yeah.
So it'd be a good way to approach it, I say.
All right.
Well, thank you, Akbar, for looking at that. And I know,
I mean,
you will, you know, contacting health department and all of these people. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
So we're just here to help. I mean,
I appreciate that. I mean, it's...
Look at us as an extension of your free staff. That's
free
what
staff.
It is. We appreciate that.
No, I mean, it's... on some of the, especially on utilities and so on, I depend on a lot of the utility engineers. I mean, it's, I cannot say I'm expert in every details of some of the guidance memos that come out in that field, you know, but as soon as I found the section that is related to, which I did send you, in, you know, for discussion and so on. And you gave me another guidance memo that says, hey, this is another one and so on. So that's why I wanted to contact a lot of different others and get their opinions and their interpretation of it and so on. And yes, I appreciate it. Thank you.
So any other discussion on the street items, perhaps, or storm drain at this time?
Did we have any follow-up discussion or for the storm drain lines? You know how your storm drains are owners changing, interchange, you know, goes from, you know, county to city to city, county to city, yeah, as you go along in the same line. And, you know, to me, that's little, I mean, I understand it's the history and that's how we came to
this. We've had a long discussion, a lot of discussions with the county. The county is very, very reluctant to take on any storm drain systems. They are underfunded to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars for their projects. So they are... we've discussed it with them, and it's been, you know, would we, and we're building to their specifications, but they, the likelihood of them taking ownership responsibility is pretty slim and none. I think that's consistent throughout the county. They've got so many holes in their system, if you will, that they've got to upgrade. You're right, we would love to have them, because that's probably their business better than ours for flood control, but they are reluctant to take on because of their underfunding, and I want to believe that. You know, part of the issue is that when the county declared bankruptcy in 1994, they dedicated part of their revenues to pay off the bankruptcy from flood control. $4 million a year went to pay off that. So that's been about 20-some-odd years that they've been paying, so they've, you know, built a hole. And they've got tremendous, you know. And then I think, Akram, what is the statement? They only want to take on pipes that are typically...
certain size. The large size pipes, mm-hmm, and they don't want to get involved in something which is, I think, is smaller than, 60 inch, if I'm not mistaken. Don't hold me on that, but there is a certain size that they don't want to touch.
Yeah.
And also, if it is, if they want to take it over, anything that is meets their requirements, it has to be upgraded to their specifications. So they don't want to get stuck with the maintenance, in other words.
So for instance, if we are repairing a storm drain, we're working to get their standards, so that we meet their standards, because that's the other thing. They don't want to take on anything with deficiencies. But again, that's sort of problematic if you're going out, unless you're systematically, it's a piece-by-piece type of thing. And they are not very receptive overall. They're just not receptive to, they'll give you tactical advice. They'll be happy to talk to you about it, but they won't be, you know, ownership is all of a sudden you can hear the crickets, you know, and it is sort of what it is. We've had discussions with not only the flood control people, but, you know, Shane Silsby, who I know from, you know, the director of Public Works, et cetera. We've had at all levels. They're consistently, you know, nicks. They don't want to deal with it.
Okay.
But we are exactly, that's a point. I mean, the mayor has actually raised that issue several times, and we've talked to them about it. We've actually had meetings about it with the county.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Could you remind me, please, if any of our facilities are on their master plan for improvement, and do you know the timetable, if we're even on the radar for upgrade?
Nope. Okay. Matter of fact, for the last 2 years, we've sent them a couple of projects that would like them to put it on their improvement master plan, but we've rated so low in comparison to the other projects that has been, the other candidates, that we don't have any.
Again, their comment to us is they can't fund their own projects, let alone fund city projects. Oh. So that's sort of their, like when I said, they're underfunded to the tune of several hundred million.
Yeah.
Their own unincorporated area, their ownership issue projects. So that's what their focus is on their master plan, candidly.
So it's not that it's going to take more public outcry to the Board of Supervisors or something to get to kick us up the chain of command. That's the only way.
It's going to take a lot more money too, yeah, basically. Okay. So, you know, they're... Yeah.
Even their facilities within our area, it's not on their list.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, don't they have a, I guess they don't monitor the condition of the facilities they own within the city limits? I mean, that would be the, I think, area where you could say, okay, what is their plan to... I'm assuming some of these lines are pretty, I mean, we already have that Henderson issue with an aging pipeline, and there's a lot of other aging pipelines. Don't the county have any plan, like, okay, you know, this pipe is 50, 60 years old, or do they wait until failure happens, and they go in and maintain this stuff?
Supposedly their lines, they try to check them every probably 10 years or whatever it is, but... Like Miss and Henderson, it's unfortunately, it was ours.
Yeah. It was a city line.
See, it feeds into a county line, which is cement, and it's already theirs is fine. There's just so their concern is what are we going to feed into theirs, because they don't want to deteriorate what they've got, and so that's sort of the issue. So they were out here on that real quick. Once they found out it wasn't their line, they lost interest really fast. Once we determined ownership, that was like, they provide supplies. I don't want to be, but they just weren't as active in sort of the design or any of the repair. They do have a master, their master plan. Mm-hmm. It gets approved, I believe, every year by their board of supervisors. But those, if you look on that list, it's all county projects, and that's what they're focused on. It's all county, unincorporated area properties and projects, or county-owned, not incorporated, but county lines. And they've got the Wintersburg Channel and some of those that are major problems that are that you're probably familiar with, and the Garden Grove areas and things that they have, Rossmore pump stations and things like that are just major, behind the times in the Seal Beach area. So they've got a lot of, and you probably heard a lot about some of that. That's where a lot of their, candidly, their emphasis is going into these monies,
Okay. So, any further discussion regarding any of the items, street, sewer, storm drain?
And I'll make sure I'll send you a copy of the street list by email. Okay.
Do you know which, or could you remind me which streets again are up next for?
That's the list right there.
Yeah.
And again, so Lee Circle, Ridgeview Circle, and Darren are all of these.
All of those. Correct.
And they are scheduled for.
I hope to have done before the June of this year.
Okay. And will there be plans prepared for these as well?
Yes. Matter of fact, I've just got the preliminary plans, and I'm going through them to make sure that. They got, their proposals, improvements, and so on. And we'll be doing
we could share those with
you. Yeah, and we'll provide those copies.
Nice to
meeting.
See them, so yes. We could evaluate the pavement rehab methods and see what's planned for those, and maybe take a look at them. So that would be great.
Sounds good.
Our goal would be to bid in March, April. And then have the work done, shortly thereafter.
Are we looking at sources of funding, grants, etc., and all of these?
On this, there isn't anything. It's not going to be. It's all going to be gas tax and general fund.
Okay.
And I think it's. Steve has the budget for the next. Yeah.
Did we put in? Did we put in a street list for the SB1 funds?
Oh, yes.
We did.
Yes.
Yeah, we have
and
those.
Is that included in the
those
in
are.
Yeah, part of SB funds will be included
in
for those, right?
That is correct.
We had them adopt a resolution.
Did we get in
what
SB
is it about?
Funds?
Not much.
40,000 or 50,000?
40 or 50,000.
Yeah, something like that.
There's a maintenance of effort requirement. We got zinged on. We had to fight with them about that. No. So.
Maintenance
compared
effort
to the city of LA. The maintenance of effort that you have to spend X amount of dollars to get their dollars. So, Akram, what the maintenance of effort, want to talk real quickly?
It's off my head, I don't, but we went through, them, and for the last few years, from the street report that is submitted to the state. And as a matter of fact, we had a lot of one-time projects. They were including it as part of the maintenance of effort, and we went back and forth with the state and lowered it. I think it went down to close to 300,000. That's our maintenance of effort, plus or minus, you know.
That's what we spend or what we're supposed to spend?
That's what we have to spend in order to get their money.
$3 million
is $300,000.
$3 million.
Yeah.
That's the whole budget, yes.
Our budget was $2 million, you said, for streets?
No, it's normally it's about $350 per month, per year. Yes.
$350 per year.
Per year.
So, and they require...
it's around that much.
About that much, yeah. For that we should be spending annually for maintenance.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the SB1 money was a ratio of that?
No, it's a
formula.
It's a formula. It's formulaic driven.
The streets, mileage, also the, you know, it's a long formula.
Okay. And you're dealing with the state controller's office, so you're not dealing with, you know, somebody who's familiar with the street projects, so we have to, you have to convince them. So candidly, I don't mean to bet on, but you're dealing with accountants deciding decisions about how much and what is a one-time project, and they don't have a clue because they think if you spent money on projects, it's all street. So
it was disappointingly low for this city. I mean,
it is a very low portion.
Got a lot of money from SP1, so there's find the list. They've got it published of the budgets that each city's getting for the first couple of years. It's available.
I can look it up exact number and email it to everybody if that SB1.
Well, we're just the allocations. Question is basically: are we looking at getting funding from everything, water, sewer, storm drain, areas?
Yeah, we do have. But I'll walk through. Like actually, we can kind of.
Yeah, maybe we move on to the next item officially, so that we're kind of talking about it anyway. Huh?
So what I've done, and the mayor had asked that we sort of give you an overview of our budget, and we can walk through this very quickly, but I kind of wanted to give you sort of a perspective of it. This is our adopted budget for 2017-18. Our fiscal year is July 1st through June 30th. You can see we start our budget back in January, the first page, and it gets adopted. So it's about a six-month development process. Our focus in Villa Park is to adopt a budget. The council's policy is to adopt where our recurring revenues are equal to or exceed our recurring expenditures. Okay, that's really significant because we don't have a lot of recurring revenues. We're really pretty low. So if you look the next page, if you look at it, we have about $3.3 million in recurring revenue. All right. Now what that funds, if you look at the general fund expenditure for this year over last year, and we you take about our total budget $3.8 million, take away our general fund capital of $645,000, and you have, because we consider the capital expenditures as one time versus operating and recurring, so we are $139,000 within our parameters of what the council has directed. You can see right below that the first pie chart is our revenues. The 84% of our revenue comes from property taxes, which is in our general fund. It's huge. That's the engine that drives Villa Park. Mm-hmm. We don't. You can see sales taxes are part of that, but the sales tax, it's when it goes up 3%, that's $7,000. So that's just an order of magnitude. You see, we just don't have.
Which one's sales taxes?
Sales taxes will be part of the taxes. It'll be part of the
taxes. Oh, it's part of taxes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Property and so that's property and sales taxes.
Property sales, any sort of other, you know, taxes that we can pull through.
Gotcha.
You look at the next page, you'll see it all ties together. We have a general fund of $3.8 million. Of that $3.8 million, we spend $690,000, almost $700,000 on just our own staff, which is basically eight staff. That would include their health, their retirement, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see it says PERS contribution rate. That's the retirement system as well. So the health benefits, et cetera. So we are not, as a percentage, we are a very small percentage. And staff isn't driving the cost here. Maintenance and operations, we spend about $2.5 million, 64% of our expenditures. That would include our law enforcement, which is the single largest item we have, is law enforcement. That's close to a $2 million contract. We have audits that we do, the NPDES activity, the tree trimming. You know, all the basic, everything else has to be crammed into that. Our capital outlay is 1% of our expenditures. And you've seen before, the $645,000 would be our general fund contribution. Now, that's really important. That's just our general fund contribution to capital projects. So you can see how it breaks out. Personnel, maintenance, just a chart there. Then if you look at our total budget, now our total budget is larger because that's going to include special identified funds. We have a $5.7 million budget, all right? And you see the general fund is a smaller portion of that. But what you're going to include here is gas tax, you know, the traffic safety, the local sales tax funds, assessment district funds, AQMD funding we receive. We get COPS funding, which is state community-oriented policing funds. We get, you know, sewer improvement funds. There's an assessment that we have here for the sewers in the city. So those are all included here. So those are not part of our general fund. We account for those separately. Gas tax, et cetera, we have to account for them separately. So our total expenditures are 6.3. You'll see it's 6.3. A lot of that is how can you have total expenditures in excess of your total revenues? That's because of your one-time carryovers or reserves that we use for projects that haven't been done over the years, or, you know, we'd saved up and we're doing projects. So you can see, again, our administration is the one everyone says, well, how much is your overhead? That's 14%. It's a pretty small percent, actually, of what we're doing. Public safety is 26% of our budget, total budget. So if you look at the next, your fund balances, it tells you kind of where we are. These are the special assessment or special funds that we get. You can see we have a lot of them. And we wouldn't survive without all these funds to get some of our projects done, including sewer improvement, a COPS funding, AQMD monies. So 17, 18 capital, the second to the right, you'll see. The assessment district will be a sewer assessment. The age of cities would be the various, you know, grants and funds and things we have. Gas tax, we can see we received $250,000 from that. We just simply don't receive, and you'll see at the very top, the $645,000, that's our general fund contribution. All right.
Again, so the gas tax, that's not SB1, that's just standard gas tax.
Gas tax, yeah. So what we do, the council has a policy where they adopt, we have a very healthy reserve, but the policy is we will contribute everything in excess of our interest earnings beyond basically the CPI to increase our reserve up to 50% so of our general fund. So we have approximately about $1.5 million general fund reserve, which is about 47 to 48% reserve. That's reserve. That's undesignated. That's, you know, so from a general fund, we have $1.5 million that's not spent. And this council is very reluctant, as all councils have been, to spend. The other source of pride is the city has never, ever borrowed money or taken out a bond. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of a sense of, you know, this is, we save up for projects, we pay on a cash basis. So that's what you see, the reserve is built up and over the years. That reserve will actually go down a little bit this year because it will help. We'll have to be paying for things, emergencies such as dealing with the Mesa Henderson storm drain. That's going to be the general fund contribution will have to come somewhat out of reserves to the extent that we can't get FEMA money. Anyway, so we are at 40. If you look at, we can't exceed by policy 50%, but we're about 47% reserve funded. You'll see the fund balance is reserved, so you'll see for an instance, we designate monies for everything. Basically, I mean, if people are retired you know, I'm sorry, they leave the city and they get paid off their sick leave benefits. We set aside reserve. We calculate that each year and say, okay, here's how much you do. So we have vehicle replacement reserves. We set aside money to replace our vehicles as well. So we try and set up reserves along the way to add to it. Now, it's, you can see we are set. The city is a very small, and it is the council has been focused on a minimalist government, if you will. They don't want to have a large government bureaucracy, and we don't. So we don't have a large staff. We don't have a lot of, you know, we have no outstanding debt. We're in a, you know, the only outstanding debt we do have is we have an unfunded liability for our retirement system. And that's the CalPERS that everybody hears about, every city is dealing with. We're about 76% funded on our actuarial liability, which in terms of if we had to pay all our debts right now, we'd pay 75% of it out. We have the ability to pay it out through our money's invested and whatnot. A healthy system is probably anything over 70-ish is a healthy system. CalPERS is below 70, for instance, themselves, but not our contribution. We would like to be between 80 and 85% funded, and you know, because of the way they calculate that. So the council has set aside the plan is to set aside $100,000 each year and invest that money in a trust fund for future contributions called a Section 115 trust. And we have, you'll see that it says PARS investment. PARS is the public, I can't tell what the acronym off the top of my head, but basically we invest money and gets dedicated to it. If and when that $400,000 is over the 4 years is put in, this is the first installment, we will be about 85% funded, which is, in comparison to most entities, extremely well funded from a liability. That would be, quote unquote, the liability the city has, the one pending liability. And we're making measures. And you'll hear about somebody saying, well, we're funded. Well, CalPERS basically adjusted, they call it discount rate, but just basically their rate of investment return. They are dropping the average rate from 7.35 to 7, which means a huge. So for cities that have, for instance, their own police department, their own fire department, et cetera, that's a huge liability that they're all going to face because they have to pick up the additional contribution or else they face being significantly underfunded. The one thing we do is we are contract with the sheriff's department. Sheriff's Department is not part of CalPERS, they're part of OSERS. They have their own 1937 Act funding system, retirement system. They are a much healthier retirement system than CalPERS. So while there is a retirement bump coming for us, it's not the kind of bump that, for instance, Orange is going to see or some of the others. The other thing you won't see in here are fire property taxes. In other words, we're part of the fire authority. Our property taxes get, I don't want to say this, but any other way, they're diverted directly and contributed to them. They don't come through our budget. They go directly, our incremental share of property taxes aligned for fire support services go directly to the fire authority. So we never budget for fire authority or the liability here. We're part of what they call the structural fire fund from the fire authority. As part of that, basically our contribution rates are set. They can't come to us and say you're going to pay more unless we want extra service or something, we can obviously say. But our rates are set. We don't have any issues. The retirement issue is not an issue for our fire. That's the problem, say, for instance, with Orange and some of these other cities. They have their own employees and they're part of a retirement system and they've got to pick that up. Mm-hmm. Our rates are set, if you will. So we're in a sort of a better position financially, I would say, by being part of the fire authority. So by being a contract city, we benefit. The downside is on, say, for instance, on the sheriff's side, we don't negotiate what the sheriff's salaries are and what they contribute. You know, so they can negotiate salaries that we're like, oh, that's outlandish. Why are you giving, you know, we don't get to negotiate those. We end up paying the bill. But we are insulated somewhat in fire and libraries and, you know, and animal care by not having to pay the CalPERS rates that otherwise would be there. So long story, but that's the biggest issue for city budgets right now. If you talk to any city manager, they're going to tell you the huge issue. And eventually the question will become, can you fix your streets or put a cop on the street? Because if they don't have the ability to fund, you know, their resources are sort of limited without extra taxes or sales tax or something. And that's why you see such a Stanton, Fountain Valley, is it Fountain Valley, maybe Westminster, that adopted a sales tax, an extra sales tax. But that's what they're doing because they can't do it. And the question becomes, can you afford what you're doing day to day, you know, sheriff support, et cetera, or I'm sorry, police, fire, et cetera, or, you know, what can you afford? So you're seeing cities going through that. Over the next 5 years, there'll be a real crunch from a city perspective. Not ours, but all about our surrounding cities. You're going to start hearing that. And candidly, what's going to happen is some of the capital projects and master plans will be put off because they can't afford. And they've got to deal with, you know, if you talk to the person on the street, most of them will say, I want my streets safe. And that first comes with law enforcement. That's sort of the orientation. And secondarily, but you say you got to have a street safe to drive on as well, you know, but
yeah.
You see sort of the dilemma, and that's the balancing act that's sort of coming up. So it's going to be a challenge. That's why SB1 is fairly important, and that's why the cities have all supported those types of funding sources, because dedicated fundings that are going to help deal with those infrastructure issues are really, really important. You'll see all our fund balances here are set aside. We have sewer, you know, you'll see the storm drain, you'll see the sewer master plan, sanitary sewer inspections, et cetera. We have money set aside for those specific purposes. The next page, probably the one that you'll, you know, the capital projects for 17-18, what we have budgeted. For briefly, software conversion, that's, you know, we're trying to automate some of what we're doing, and the software conversion via our accounting system, or we're trying to automate our business license. Right now, for instance, you have to come in here to get a business license. We process it manually. Well, we'd like to have that automated and things, and that's sort of what we're trying to put money aside. Street improvement, $840,000. The chair, we set aside $840,000 for that list of projects that's right there.
Okay.
So that's sort of our budget for that. We're sort of trying to do things in a two-year project cycle as far as funding them. Okay. Design 1 year, payment the next. You know, so they're not all hitting our, you know, in other words, our general fund contribution. We can't spread it all over, so we have a limited. So every other year we try and do certain things.
Okay.
So,
do we have estimates on the current project as part of the preliminary
on
plans?
This one?
Yes.
We have, I don't know if Akram has,
he sends the plans, he can. Yeah.
Akram, do you have an estimate on the street improvement? We had
$840,000.
The street improvement.
It's about. It's going to be close to over $650,000.
$650,000.
So we may have
estimated.
Okay. Yeah. But
so there's a possibility, perhaps, that we could add to the streets.
Or depending on what they come in, is what they're, you know, the types of things they're doing as you
right, exactly.
Notice. I mean,
so the methods. Right.
Okay. So I mean, which is a good position to be in, candidly.
Yeah.
I view it as we're better there than. And having $650,000 budget and having the estimate at $800,000, I'd much rather deal with where we're coming from. The storm drain improvement, the storm drain collapse, $680,000. We are funding that through a number of combinations. So you'll see storm drain improvement and storm drain collapse. That gets it to about $800,000. That's probably the project estimate is somewhere in the range. Mesa Henderson is probably in the range of $850,000.
$850,000.
You can sort of see if we have a $5 million budget and we spend $850,000 on a single project, you can sort of see where we have limitations about what we can do. And normal operating expenditures that run you about $3 million. So you start to see that there's not a lot of room here in context. And I think that's why the mayor wanted you guys to sort of see what we have. $5 million budget. I mean, I tell people we have a $5 million budget, and they sort of like, you know, is that just for law enforcement? Is that for, you know, I mean, we are a blip on most people. We're a rounding error for most cities.
Right.
I mean, I don't mean to be flippant, but that's candidly what we, Orange, Anaheim, $5 million. I mean, that's sort of the weekly agenda or monthly agenda. They go through that kind of money. And I don't mean that flippant. Again, it's just that we're so small. But context-wise, we don't have a lot of extra resources. I'll be very candid. This council is not looking and will not look at a special assessment taxes or those kinds of things. This is not it's a very conservative city and council, and they don't. They'll live with it. Like you, I read you the philosophy: recurring revenues will equal recurrent, and we'll get there. And that's sort of the mission, the underlying foundation of philosophy of where we've been, and the city has been that way.
Do we have any data on the income side, on the revenue side? Do we have any data on the number of homes in the city that are still under Prop 13 that are just paying, you know, base minimum,
you know,
minimum
what?
Taxes? And,
no,
and
we do, but that gets, see, a lot of our assessed valuation went up about 5%+ this year. Far in excess. I mean, we didn't have new development. What we have is remodels. So under Prop 13, when you remodel, you get reassessed.
Yeah.
So that's candidly what's happening. So
it's on the rise.
It's on the rise. Okay. And as new people move in, you get houses that are upgraded. But we're 99% built out. So you're just not going to get build out, if you will.
Right.
Or development projects.
I just wonder how many homes are still owned by kind of the original owners where they're not paying. You know, what percentage
I don't have the number on that.
Very low property tax rate that would flip up to a very high number if it's sold.
Well, the issue is if, even if it's owned by the very original owner, if they've done an appraisal, you know, if they've done a remodel and that's an appraisal, you know, we go out, it's appraised, then it's changes value. So you can't necessarily just say who's the original owner. We have a lot of original owners, but in the original shape of the house, that's the other complicating factor. Most everybody in Villa Park at some point, I've sort of realized, has upgraded, remodeled, or done something, added on additions to their houses or things like that.
Yeah, it makes sense. Okay.
And we strongly encourage it. That's why, you know, we built Terran, and so we're trying to be user-friendly about that, and Bill's, our building inspectors goes out. We try and make it very, and that's why we have valuation growth that's pretty strong. The market tends to be very well for Villa Park. The real estate market, but you do have, and you do have, the average age is 59 in Villa Park, if that sort of gives you any sort of indicator of who might, you know. So you could demographically, you start thinking, well, these are original owners or people who are
very young.
but they're probably people who can afford to move into the area, et cetera, because your younger families who are just starting out are not buying homes in Villa Park. They can't afford to do that. With homes averaging in the range of, you know, 2 million plus, it doesn't happen. So it's a good question.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what the trend of increased revenue will be just based on property taxes as things change over time. I mean, as long as homes appreciate, that'll be good.
If we see, you know, the housing, we actually withstood the housing crisis pretty well because of, again, of our the nature of our homes. I mean, it doesn't drop. I mean, if to the extent that the assessor starts dropping values, that's going to affect us.
Yeah.
But right now, we went through 2008, which is the last real house, and we've sort of come through that okay. But that's a challenge, because you see such a large portion of what we have is property tax based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
So if we take a hit, you know, I mean, you know, that's not a good sign. So we sort of, I know the mayor spends a lot of time combing through the housing section every week, our business section, to see. And there are articles that come up all the time about, you know, how's the housing market doing.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting thing. The realtors are very active in Villa Park.
But you're saying our property tax revenue went up 5% last year?
Yes, over 5%.
And what's that trend? It's
still upward trend. It's that exceeded prior year, which is 4%.
Okay.
Right. We exceeded countywide averages. They were expecting 3 to 4, and we got 5+. So again, we're doing well, but you know, the other thing is you always have to sort of like be careful. So that's why you see a reserve that's strong reserve.
Oh yeah.
Then we have the available fund balances. Our available fund balances are simply the monies that you haven't spent from, you know, the carry forward funds, et cetera, at the end of the year. So that's sort of a whirlwind tour of our city budget. We can get you the capital plan. You have actually the capital plan on those that he gave out. But I think what the mayor was trying to indicate is that, one, we're a minimalist government structure, and it's a very conservative. And then the other thing he wanted to context, how large we're really talking about. So you guys are probably familiar with designing projects that are larger than our whole budget. You know, you've probably seen these things. Oh, yeah, the estimate's much larger.
I think that's the key to this committee, is to really understand what funds we have available and work within those constraints. And we're not going to go do all the things we'd love to go do. Yeah. So,
I mean, if you would, the list, and I keep talking to the mayor, he has a list of things. Well, we can do this, and we can, you know, let's get to the storm drains. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, we're spending $840,000 on streets, and you've sort of taken out everything we have and ongoing revenues at that point.
Well, maybe the value of this committee is to help really laser focus in on the priorities. What really are the priorities, so they don't have a storm drain?
And the efficiencies, like you were suggesting,
right.
Why is the cost breakdown?
Value engineering is, I think, a critical component of this committee, because we want to make sure that with the little money that we have, that we're using it wisely and most efficiently, and knowing that the city doesn't have huge monies to do major repairs in case something breaks.
And we're
want to do it right
we
the first time,
have.
Right? Yeah. We want to do it right the first time.
Sure. So, yeah, and, so the philosophy has been, like, with Mesa and et cetera, some of the stuff has been, let's fix it when it breaks. I mean, it's not a great philosophy, but it is what you sort of have to do with your constraints. So where we have money, we're investing it, but we need to invest it exactly what you're saying, value engineering, get the most bang for your buck. As a city manager, that's what I want. I want to be the most efficient long-term return that I can get out of the deal. So your value is, your contribution is great in that regard. If you can help us, stretch our dollar, get more efficiencies for our dollar, and or get longer lasting return on our dollar, that's the value I see.
And really prioritize,
Yeah.
That's going to be key, I think. What's the thing that's closest to failing that we really need to focus on versus something that's not great but serviceable?
No.
Okay. So with that in mind, we had one question that was brought up at the last committee meeting, and that's about the update of the PCI payment management report or study for the city. So based on that, I think Akram or somebody mentioned that Dyna testing was going to be done as part of that.
No, it was done.
It was done previously.
2 years ago.
Okay. We don't think that Dyna testing is really warranted for our streets and our communities. So I don't think that I haven't seen the contract for the update, but I don't think we need to spend the extra money to do that effort for our streets. So make sure that 100%. That doesn't happen.
Akram and I were talking last night about this, and he was saying, Steve, I because the mayor has asked, he's encouraging us to do it. And he said, Steve, he came in and said, Steve, this probably doesn't make sense this time.
For the types of streets and the uses of our streets, it's really a waste of money. If we had major arterials, within our city, then, we could see that on the major arterials only. But for local and collector residential style streets, it's a waste of money. It's not going to tell us anything that we can't find out but through the regular course of the study.
And there is no requirement, probably, in order not to jeopardize your funding or anything.
That is correct.
It's optional.
That is correct. As a matter of fact, it's not even requested that. The OCTA Measure M requirements for the pavement management data has to be done every 2 years to be updated. And the inspection, matter of fact, is 2 years for the arterials, and which is part of the master plan of arterial highway. And the residential, the inspection to be within every 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I was proposing for the city manager is to, yesterday, so we can send the RFP and get it moving on that, is just limit the inspection this time on the arterial only. And not do the residential since we had it done every last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we kind of have a good records of it. Plus we're doing a lot of streets, as you see from the list, a majority of them are residential. So figure out we can delay the inspection of the residential for the next round and just concentrate on the arterial.
And the inspection is 100%, 25%,
it's 50%? It's a visual inspection. They do it.
But do you do 100% coverage or you do 25%?
Okay, what they do is they do samples. And, also what they do, they drive in their vehicle and they kind of like estimate the different stresses on this, on the pavement itself. And they input it on the...
But they drive 100% of the streets?
They drive 100% of the... if we're concentrating on the arterials, they'll drive all the... yes, 100%.
But there's a physical inspection of 100% of the arterials.
Whatever we're targeting.
Yes, whatever we're targeting, yes.
Because sometimes, like on FAA projects, I'm going to say, at least on airport runways and taxiways and stuff, we only do 25%
correct.
Of the area, and then we just sort of... extrapolate and get the whole runway PCI done, a lot quicker that way.
That
FAA
is correct.
Doesn't require you to go 100% and correct. Inspect visually every corner of it.
And it's not required also in here with the micropaver and the Measure M. But since our streets are you know, not that much.
Not that long.
So we do have them look at the whole street
so
itself.
So which of our streets are classified as arterials then in the master plan? Of
okay. It's the ones which is Villa Park and Taft. And I include, even though they are not part of the master plan of arterial highway, I include also Santiago, you know, both Santiago's, and also Lemon and Center and Valley. So these are, you know, I call it also the collectors as part of the arterial. So this way, those are the main street. You know, those are the ones that I will include as
so
part.
So in regards to the residential review, the last pavement management study, did that occur before or after the major rains we had?
I'm trying to remember. It was sometimes in May of...
Before the rains or after, do you recall?
It was... Well, remember, the we didn't do it last year, which it was the big storm,
the,
so it was 2015.
Before the 2017.
Yes, 2016.
So my
yes.
main concern at not looking at the residentials, and as you probably all noticed driving through town Orange, and is that after that major rain event, the streets in Orange just opened up. Mm-hmm. There were potholes on Tustin, potholes on Catella, potholes down Chapman. They just, with a little significant amount of rain, you could the condition of the street really was exaggerated. Okay, so my main concern, I'm sure that happened to our streets too. So my main concern is if we don't look at them, if they were evaluated before that rain, we had all that water intrusion into the subgrade, that if we don't look at them maybe now, that they may be two or three times worse than they would have been during a dry year. And without physically inspecting them as we select which streets need to be done first, we can skip them, but before we actually put them on the list for repair based on a two-year-old pre-rain, PCI study, then I don't know if that, you know, without looking at the entire city and driving the entire city again, are we certain that we are applying our money to the worst streets in the city?
We could add that to this.
That's no problem. I mean, we haven't sent the RFP. It's just we had a discussion.
Does that sound like reasonable?
That we can include
that's
whole,
what you guys... You know, that's why you guys are here. Yeah. Give us some advice.
Yeah. If they're doing drive-by inspection,
it shouldn't take that long.
What's
but
the cost difference to do? What would that be, would you say?
No, it's a big difference, I mean, because most of our streets are residential.
Order of magnitude. What's
you're
that?
Talking about probably, you're looking at $30,000, $40,000. That's what the inspection is going to be, the pavement management.
So, versus...
Probably that.
Versus just if you just do the arterials. What's the delta between? Mm-hmm.
Probably 50%.
Okay. 50%.
Because
if it's $40,000, if it's $40,000
spent, report is still the same. You're including everything. So it's about 50%.
If the committee...
Or do we look at the low PCI numbers, residential streets, rather than entire city, right? You're thinking about entire city numbers?
That was the suggestion, because... Just from physically watching what happened after the rain on our local streets in this general area, it seemed like a lot of damage occurred. Mm-hmm. And they quickly just wanted to, you know, put a slurry seal on it, and they'll take care of it. But there's still like dips and ruts, and things weren't really addressed for the long term. So since we don't get, we only have, 2 million, whatever, if we don't get out there, we don't want to get out there regularly. I just want to make sure that the streets that we are targeting, because last thing we want to do is have a resident say, my street's worse than that street. How come you didn't fix my street first?
And they
may have a point, because you're basing your judgment on which streets to do first on something that's a little too old.
Given that the rains were extraordinary, ordinary last year, I mean, extraordinarily.
Right.
I would say that we wouldn't just target the low PCI. Let's just do the whole thing this time and use as a, I mean, if it was just a normal rainy season, I would, but these were extra ordinary rain. So we had, you know, 1.5 times normal rain, et cetera. So why don't we do this as the, this could be our baseline, if you will, and maybe in 2 years we say we don't need to do every one. We just do the, you know, maybe that may be the way it is, just this time because of the rains.
The way we to look at is basically the streets that are carrying a lot of water. So basically you look at your master plan, see which streets are, there's a lot of water, like the small cul-de-sacs are not going to be damaged by low.
Well, but you know what, the cul-de-sacs actually get beat up a little bit. We've had discussions because of the heavy trucks.
Yeah, so, because of the trash trucks, period. Yeah.
Yeah. So we, I'm inclined, based on what you're saying, it's a good point. Let's just say, let's do a baseline. I mean, I know 30 to 40,000 versus maybe 15,000 seems like, but 15,000 may be well spent in the long term, because what's a total repair if you have potholes and things and you have to deal with it down the road, or liabilities for accidents and things like that where you've got, you know, I just think that we're probably wise to get a baseline.
Well, looking at your list, they're mostly cul-de-sacs. I mean,
the list what we
for this
did
year,
is
for this year.
Yeah, for this year.
We took the lowest PCI streets, and also took the neighborhood. So this way, as you said, you were doing this street. So in, you know, we don't want the neighbors next door. You know, with the intersecting cul-de-sac. Uh-oh, how come you're doing this his street, not ours? So that's why we kind of like combine some of the neighborhoods.
But inspection for next year's improvements, right? That's what
yes.
you're going to use.
The projects we have, the projects that we have for this year, we're already designing,
already
and you'll see those.
Yes.
But that's what I say. There's a design. There's a lapse. You have to do this. So this will serve as a foundation for our next set of projects. So again, it's going to be older anyway. By the time you, I think you do this as a baseline. I agree with you.
Well, there's the other option that we could, you know, PCI indexes are broken out into categories like the worst, you know, repair now, wait 5 years, whatever. So we could, if we wanted to maybe save some of that cost and the effort, we could draw the line at, you know, 1 to 5 or 2 to 3 and say, okay, from 2 years ago, the streets that were already in the, you know, rehabilitate in a couple of years, they're worse now. Let's look at those with a PCI index previously of so much, evaluate those or reevaluate those now as part of this update, and then the others that were in great condition before, maybe we don't need to look at them until, you know, later.
You know,
but that, I don't know if that would save us a lot, but...
So you probably aren't there.
Probably not, because the mobilization of the equipment coming in, and so... Additional, let's say, 10 miles is not going to make that much difference. So probably I would agree with you to do the whole thing this year. And
then next year, next time, 2 year cycle,
we
come back and say, okay, now we haven't had, nothing's been extra normal. And so, you know, if we have a rains like we do this year, which is none.
Mm-hmm.
We probably, can think about the whole thing and say, okay, let's lower it and save ourselves some money. But I mean, as a base, I think you're right. Last year was so heavy.
So you kind of scale back a little bit now.
Yeah, I'm thinking, driving it, you know, PCI index we've done, and driving it at 5 miles an hour real fast doesn't really give you a whole lot. I mean, it's very subjective. It's basically the guy sitting there looking at it. I think a lot of things that you look at after a rain, like we've had rains last year, you have cracks now, and these cracks, you have grass growing in between these cracks. So those are the areas where you have to really look and start looking and saying, okay, you know, you have a crack that's over 1/2 inch. If you leave it as is, your structural section is going to deteriorate in no time. So that's why I was saying, you know, specifically look at the ones that are carrying a lot of water and have damage. So versus a cul-de-sac, we've done a lot of projects that don't do small area, we do like huge areas. And typically, the ones with the higher traffic index, higher water carrying, are the ones that are damaged. Mm-hmm. Granted that if somebody built a cul-de-sac in 1950 and hasn't done anything to it, then all of a sudden, because of 50 years of trash trucks stopping and going, that you have deterioration around the cul-de-sacs. And I don't know how many cul-de-sacs are in this city and how much it would add to the cost, but that's something to look at. Because those through streets carry, you know, a lot of traffic, like you said, you know, you have Santiago and then Center.
That's a good bunch to look at.
Taft, Valley, you know, it's give and take, but you also have to look at, you know, which ones are at the border that if you don't even seal the cracks, in 2 years you're going to have major failures.
I don't think I'm cautioning. Is at 9 o'clock, this room is reserved for another committee meeting. So I do want us to sort of, you know, and we sort of talked about not spending all your time all day.
Okay.
It's already been an hour and 15. I don't want to, I just, as a, so again, we probably, I think if the committee, maybe if you can give us sort of a, your collective thoughts, if we can sort of vote on what we recommend, because I'm, that might be a good thing to do at this point and get some direction, because I think he wants to go out with the RFP.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of like the idea of definitely looking at the whole thing initially, but then I said, you know, maybe we should save some money, not look at everything, but then his point is we're not going to really save a lot of money because a lot of the cost is mobilization, demobilization, and maybe... So I guess, you know, if we think we're not going to save a lot of money, I would say maybe look at everything, right? I mean, if there is really a small delta, and I think you're the best one probably to determine whether there's a small delta or a large delta. But, you know, I initially thought, you know, kind of along the same lines of where are the critical areas, maybe let's get those done. But
is that something we can identify without the PM? I mean, is it just a matter of, because we know which streets have the low PCI index. So it's a matter of just identifying those, which they do for this, for the list of streets to be repaired, and then actually have somebody evaluate not just those, but maybe a few others in areas that are the worst, and do it more on a as-needed basis with you know, with city staff or with the committee instead of, I don't know, it's almost a toss-up.
Yeah. Or you could do both. You could do, you get an RFP with both. One with just the arterial and one with the combined and see the cost of this.
You get a true delta. You get a true delta. Yeah. We could do that.
And then you put
why don't we do that to see?
Oh, as an additive alternate.
That's a good suggestion. It's sort of like alternate A, B.
Right. And then we want to see.
Additive, you know, you're either going to add that to this stuff to
sure,
it or not.
Sure. Yeah. Base additive.
Right. And then we can make a determination if we'd rather spend the money on the physical improvements or if we want to spend it on the updated PCI.
I do have a suggestion. I mean, would it help us as a committee, and I don't know if we can do this or not, but to do a little field trip together on a Saturday and just get our eyes on
we can
the,
do
the
it.
City.
It's a Brown Act. It has to be notified.
Okay.
So that sort of thing.
How about a bicycle ride?
There were that. Yeah. A little bit on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, you know, candidly, I mean, because this is such a small city, and we the council has done things, and we've sort of talked. We're not doing a site tour, if you will, because you know they get around. So I would, you know, and I said to them, you know, and they all sort of agreed. I'd rather go at my own pace and go around my own and see what's going on and drive around the city because it's only 2 square miles. It's not like we're not like we're talking. Prearranging and getting, but I mean, we're talking, so I mean, that would be just a, you know, a suggestion, because Brown Act means we notice it has to be 72 hours in advance, we have to make public comment available, we have to meet in a central place so people, you know, it just becomes a difficult, whereas if you guys go, even two of you go, or a subcommittee go individually, or, you know, you guys call each other, hey, let's go, you're fine, and it's not a problem, or, you know, Paige, and, you know, you guys go around.
I know there's procedure to it, but it seems like there'd be some value of all of us getting our eyes on the city together. I mean, you know, I think we would reconvene and have a lot better picture of what our city looks like. We can do it individually. That's no problem.
We could do whatever. I mean,
more
I'm just
value
saying,
in
it becomes just more of a, setting it up.
I get it.
Yeah. Is it like a...
It has to be an official meeting.
It has to be an official meeting of how many people?
As long as you have a majority of this group.
Okay.
So anytime you have a 50% plus, you have to have a public notice or whatever. So like I say, three of you can go. And
maybe we can do it 2-2 and, you know.
Yeah, we can do that.
And compare, you can compare notes at a meeting, then come back and compare notes, and that's the same, you know. I'm just, for logistically, it sort of gets like it's a little problematic.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I know. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm a visual guy. I mean, I've got to see what we're looking at.
Oh, I think it's a great idea.
For it, so.
What's your timeline for advertising? When are you going to advertise?
With the payment management, we have to have the report as part of the Measure M eligibility package by June. So I want to start, send the RFP by the end of this month or probably next month, early next month. Mm-hmm. So this way it gives them time to do the inspection plus doing the report and reviewing the report and so on and all that.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting that our field visit delay that. I'm just saying, just for the benefit.
No, I think actually we may do a field visit. Might be a good thing anyway. We go see the storm drains. We can go see some of this. Some of the different things out there. So I can schedule that. But if you're on the street thing, it might be something that we sounds like timing.
I'm just talking about a general.
If we decide to do a flat bicycle ride, that has nothing to do with this committee.
You can do that.
Okay.
As long as you don't discuss business.
Okay.
Business. You can discuss your own private business, obviously. Okay. But you can't, Cersei, it's intended to avoid, the Brown Act is intended to avoid people doing backroom deals.
We're not here to break any rules. It just seems like
and
a benefit.
It is so, if three council members get together, I caution them at functions, be careful, don't talk about the agenda next week, because you are violating a Brown Act. And it's, so you just have to be careful. And while it's not a problem and nobody, it is, the perception and it's the law. So we all sort of, I'm just being fair with you. And so I caution you so that we don't ever get ourselves in. You never have any worries then. You don't have to. Life is easier when you live a simple life. That's what I tell my wife. It's simple is good.
So discussion of the condition of the street is considered?
If it's a subgroup, you're fine.
Okay.
So if you were go, the three of you were to go, no problem. If you bring them in and you don't have a regular meeting and you start saying, we went out and here's what I think, what do you think? And that becomes an information gathering and it becomes the foundation for decision making. Okay. So from a Brown Act perspective, you have then crossed over, hi, how are ya, social, or even how's business on your private to... business oriented. The purpose of this meeting, anything that's purpose of this committee, that's what the Brown Act would. You should probably stay away from. But you got, like I say, you the three of you can go and you can have compare notes and you can do whatever. Whatever. A subgroup can go at any time. What can't be is a majority of the group because that constant. And then if you go as a subgroup, you can't. And aside same, see him at a meeting and see him at the Dunkin' Donuts and say, hey, we went and this is what we think. And he says, oh, well, this is what I think. Then you have basically compared notes, and then you have become in the deliberative process, if you will.
But can we compare notes when we come back?
In here, yes. Yeah. I can agendize it. You can have any discussion you want. And it's just designed so the public knows what you're doing. That's what it's intended to do. So,
and if we decided there was benefit in all of us going and making an official meeting and all
you
that,
can do that,
do we have access to a van?
No, we have to. That's the thing. We don't have a van. Try and figure. They used the sheriff's van last time, but it involved a little bit of court. That's what I'm saying. We have five vehicles.
Yeah, okay.
Two of them are PSR vehicles here that are sedans, and three service vehicles.
I have a small motorhome. We can jump.
So I don't have room in my car. So,
We may even go outside of the city.
Maybe.
Stop for a restaurant.
All right, fair enough.
It's one that gets right. No, I think it's a good idea. I think we should do it, but let me,
especially in the early stages of our involvement. I mean, I know that these meetings would be more meaningful if we all went out and saw the city and saw the different.
Very informative.
All right, we can figure that out.
So,
and if you decided to go small group, let me know. I'll be glad to join you. I don't think that would violate the Brown Act. Is that correct?
You're part of the committee, too.
Five would be majority, right? Are we counting the
council members? Well, basically, the committee as construed is the, if you see on your minutes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of us. So four or more. is construed.
Yeah, five would be.
Five would be four.
Four would be majority.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it would be 50%. 50% or more, because a vote. If we had a vote and 50% of you, a 50% vote, it could be four to three, for instance, and you know one person not being here right now or something like that. You would have a majority. You could pass something. Mm-hmm. So you technically could be violating, you know, so it's four or more, 50%.
So staff so is voting.
This is okay. Part of it. The way it was construed, nice, we're all part of it. Right?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Which is good because you guys, you know, the larger the group, the better you're off because it's easier to, you know, what you would do is a two or three of you go at a time. It's considered an ad hoc, and those are not temporary ad hoc meetings, and those are not considered Brown Act meetings.
Okay.
I hate to bore you with all that stuff, but it's stuff I have to. That's my world.
Three can do a field trip.
Three can do a field trip. Although all of us can do a field trip. It's just we have to notice it. And
do we have to provide the transportation for the public if we have the meeting?
We would have to potentially have a place here that they could speak, or a meeting place where they could speak before and after. In other words.
So we have to start here.
And they would have to have an itinerary of where you're going so they could potentially say, I want to go with you.
Right.
So that you weren't, when you were up to Mesa, you guys didn't all get together and make this decision and come back here and say, oh yeah, well guess what we decided. They have to have the ability, it has to be done in open. So we have to give them agenda of here's where we're going to stop and here's our time. It becomes, like I say, it becomes a bureaucratic nightmare. Your worst nightmare that you could have. Like, you would have to go to corporate office and make all these decisions and have to deal with the accountants and everybody else. So that's sort of what the world is here.
Okay.
So we will do a two-bid, sort of on the residential and thing, and we'll go that way.
Right.
And then,
as an additive alternate, perhaps.
Yeah. That's a very
residential.
Good
idea. And that should be clear to the bidders. And since we're a little bit short on time, is it okay if we table the discussion on the GIS system until next meeting? Or would
we? Yeah, we'll go to that.
Okay.
When do we want the next meeting to be?
And the next meeting. Sooner rather than
later.
Happy
Thursday at 7:30 again, right?
That works for, everybody.
I think.
Do you want to do it in 2-3 weeks?
I think 3 weeks would be good if everyone's up for that.
I don't know what that is. Let's see, does anyone have a calendar?
The first of March.
First of March.
I'll be in Florida.
Okay. And you didn't invite us?
No. For two Thursdays in a row.
Oh, 2 Thursdays in a row?
Yeah.
Do you want to, the you Thursday before are you out, or the Thursday after that are you out?
22nd.
And the 1st?
February 22nd is okay, if you want to do it that soon. Or
and the one after that?
I'm out.
He's out the one after
two
that.
Thursdays after. Oh. Are you out the whole week? So changing the day would make a difference.
Yeah, I'm in Florida for a whole week from Thursday to Friday. Yeah.
We could do the 22nd. It's 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I could do that.
Or we could.
Then otherwise
it's
going to
be 5 weeks out, right?
Then I have to go to the. You meet without me.
Yeah, we can. You know what? You can call in. We can arrange that too. So you can call into a meeting, as long as. Where you're at, you have to have a note there, and you just post a note on a bulletin board. You see it all the time in hotels where somebody's having a meeting, and it's just you post it. And God knows nobody will ever ask you what's going on. What's going on in Hill Park? I'll let them testify. It don't happen. But you can call in, and we can.
There's a meeting at 9.
Yeah. Got it.
Well, why don't we do the first then? You can call in. What do you think?
Yeah, we can call. You and I can work on arrangements, and I'll set you up.
Yep.
Same time.
You know
March 1st.
Set it for March 1st because I fly out. I might be able to go from here straight to the airport.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay.
So
7:30 if we keep the time.
Yes, keep us.
Yeah, that sounds good.
7:30.
On schedule. 7:30.
Yeah,
7:30 March 1st. Next meeting.
Okay.
We can do it early if you want. 7:00.
We are adjourned.
Okay.
Yeah, we can do it 7 if that works.
Well, my kids will kill you for that. I have to tell them at school. Don't do that. They were like kicking and screaming. Why do you have to go so early today?
They can't go to 0:00.
No. They actually go to daycare in the morning, but it opens at 7:00, so I have to scram down.
No problem.
Young kids.
12, 14.
Oh.
Young enough they can't stay home on their own, even though they want to.
They're very close, though.
We're wrapping up. Yeah, we're done. Yep. Yeah, we're here. We're done.